Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Here we are. Great to have you along today on the Connecting Faith. Well, say Happy New Year to you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Welcome back, Ryan. Back after visiting parts of the Great West where you can actually see the stars at night.
Oh, man. I caught a glimpse, and I looked at these sort of shining orbs above my head. I was like, what are those?
I'm no longer in the city. So, yes.
It's beautiful out there. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you,
my friend. You know, I was just listening to that today's Good News verse, a reminder that it's not that we love God, but that he loved us. I think that's such a great setup for today's discussion. So, I'm looking forward to today's program. So, no pressure on our guests, but I'm really looking forward to it. And by the way, tomorrow, just a little heads up, tomorrow on the New Year's Eve edition of Connecting Faith, we're going to hear a talk with the pastor and teacher Jordan Easley. Pastor Easley is in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Hey.
And he's written a great book called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live, which seems pretty appropriate as we head into the new year.
And he gets to spend New Year's Eve noon with you. I mean, what a gift for him.
for him, yes. He may have to go to bed early. He may not make the see the ball drop. But, you know, we want to talk about life change because that's the story of today's discussion. We're going to reference a book called Surprised by Oxford. And this is a memoir from Carolyn Weber. And I read Carolyn's, this is not her latest book. Her latest book is called Holy is the Day, Living in the Gift of the Present. And Carolyn was on Faith Radio Mornings here a month or so ago.
Sure.
And the book was just was so well written. And I was just interested in her story. Carolyn is an author, a speaker, and a teacher who specialized in 18th and 19th century British and European literature, which is not really my specialization, I must admit. But her recent academic positions include Associate Professor of English Literature at Seattle University and Visiting Associate Professor of English Literature at Westmont College in Santa Barbara. And she's written several things, which we'll maybe get into in the broadcast. Has a blog that she writes at occasionally. But so in just hearing her on with Ted and PK, just thought I want to hear the rest of her story. And fortunately, she's written that in a wonderful book came out a few years ago. I think maybe a couple of years ago. Thomas Nelson. It's called Surprised by Oxford. Carolyn Weber, welcome back to Faith Radio.
Thank you so much for having me here, Neil. It's a real privilege and a pleasure.
This is your story, let me just set it up because I always love hearing life change story, and this was one of those. You came to Oxford to do graduate study. That's a pretty big deal from London, Ontario, and you know, pretty much rational and feminist and all those things had really no God-shaped void that you were aware of, and then in the process, God sort of started doing some work in your life. So let's start out with a little bit of London, Ontario versus London, England. Get a little pre-Oxford story from Carolyn Weber.
Sure. London, Ontario. I actually flew. It's kind of a neat thing to fly from London to London when I went to go study there. But London, Ontario, mid-sized town, sort of outside Toronto, up here in Canada, in Ontario, Canada, and a fairly comfortable town. In some ways, has a university, has a couple of big hospitals, but it's also got a great rural and farming area. And I grew up here, and I would say, like many of us in North America, probably more familiar with astrology than theology, sort of, you know, obviously had heard of Jesus, but grew up in a loosely Catholic sort of family, but not really any kind of faith. And a family, as I describe in my memoir, loving enough to get by, but broken enough not to deserve God's attention. And a single mom eventually raising us alone. And I was working several jobs while I was going through college to kind of survive and help support my family. And wasn't very trusting of fathers, therefore, in general. fathers were something that was absent in my life and not dependable, and therefore there wasn't really any way I was going to believe in an eternal father. So I probably would have defined myself as loosely agnostic because I couldn't disprove God, but really sort of putting all my pennies in the bank according to what I could do in terms of self-sufficiency, rationalism, whatnot. And I really enjoyed my studies. I was studying literature here, and I ended up winning a Commonwealth Scholarship, which is kind of like a Rhodes to go study at Oxford, which was the most money I'd ever seen. So it was incredibly intoxicating that way, and I could send money home to support my family. But I really didn't want to go in many ways. I was engaged to my college sweetheart, who was really an adamant atheist, and I was determined to study literature from a feminist point of view. I carried a lot of anger and whatnot, a lot of joy and happiness in my family, but a lot of sort of anger, particularly with the father hole situation. And I just, when I won the scholarship, I felt, I was told, you know, I really couldn't turn it down. And so I did go to study in one of the most beautiful places in the world, but with really mixed feelings and a lot of homesickness.
Tell us a little bit about, I mean, Oxford, even as you describe in the book, just sort of little bits of discovery, I guess, even coming to the particular campus. And I guess, you know, we think of Oxford as sort of just one university, but there's sort of several universities there. But there was even your namesake for a part of it, right?
Right. It's actually a very magical place when you arrive. I have to say that it is a bit like walking through the door into Narnia, because in North America, we're so used to campuses being a set place. But Oxford's actually been built into the city. So it's 32, 33 colleges or so that have been built into the city. So you can walk through this gorgeous old city, you know, over 1,000 years old, and the buildings there. And the colleges are sort of behind these walls, and they surprise you when you walk into them. Then there's these beautiful places. So physically, it's a gorgeous place to study. But when I arrived, one of the reasons I called my memoir Surprised by Oxford was because, echoing C.S. Lewis's conversion narrative, Surprised by Joy, he became a Christian at Oxford as well. It sort of snuck up on him, and he was a reluctant convert, as he calls himself. But I went there to study, as I said, to focus on my studies, to put my head down, to actually delve more into my self-sufficiency and into my rationalism. And yet I think at the heart of me, and as all of us do, we have this yearning, this longing, the German word that even Lewis uses, Sehnsucht, this sort of ache that we can't put our finger on. And as I was studying the Romantics, the 18th and 19th century writers, they're really interested in that sort of infinite longing. And that was in my heart in some ways, and God was knocking in some ways. I didn't know how that was going to be opened up. So arriving there in that beautiful place, this historic place, studying among these beautiful buildings, all this history, and then I started to meet folks who had a deep faith, and they were sharing that with me in really wonderful, non-hypocritical and intellectual ways, and I had never tasted that before.
In fact, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that one person in particular. You called him TDH for tall, dark, and handsome. And we'll unpack that story in a moment. But I want to find out more about how those faith conversations happen, because you're in a place where there's graduate students all over, and it's all about conversations and study and intellectual vigor. So we'll get to that in a moment as we talk more with Carolyn Weber. We're going to hear her story this hour about, as she's written about it powerfully in a wonderful book called Surprised by Oxford. By the way, we've got a couple of copies. We'll do a little drawing to give away as well. You would love this, and there may be someone as you hear the story that you can think of particularly that would just find this really challenging and meaningful and maybe life-changing. We'd love that. Love to have you call 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, and Grace will get your contact information down, and we can put you in the drawing for a book. More with Carolyn Weber in a moment.
Real encouragement for an active walk of faith. Podcast audio of today's programs on Faith Radio in case you missed the show. The very latest on conferences and events in your area. It's all in one place and delivered right to your inbox from Faith Radio. When you subscribe by email to myfaithradio.com, head to myfaithradio.com and enter your email address in the subscribe box right at the top of the page, helping you connect faith to life every day at myfaithradio.com.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Are you new to the station? Well, welcome. It's great to have you tuning in. We have a new listener packet that's designed for friends just like you. It tells you a little bit about the station, who we are, why we exist, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest. It's yours free for the asking at myfaithradio.com. Check it out. It's myfaithradio.com. It's the new listener packet. Request yours today.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we're learning today about one's personal testimony of coming to believe in the creeds and the God behind that prompted those creeds. We're talking today with Carolyn Weber. She arrived at Oxford as a feminist from a loving but broken family, suspicious of men, and intellectually hostile to all things religious. But in the process, she encountered people and topics and began wrestling, and the book that she's written out of that is called Surprise by Oxford. She's also written, by the way, Holy is the Day. That's her latest, called Living in the Gift of the Present. Carolyn specializes in 18th and 19th century British and European literature, and she's served as a professor in several places, including Westmont and Seattle University, and is with us today on Connecting Faith. Carol, when you were Carolyn, I suppose. Carol is what I guess was kind of is your nickname, I guess, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you encountered some people and started having discussions about things of faith. Tell me a little bit about your first encounter with somebody you called TDH.
TDH, tall, dark, and handsome. Well, as you remember, I was engaged to someone else, so that's probably a bit of a scandal. But when I first met TDH, he was a gentleman, an American who was living in the same sort of dorm area as myself in the hall next door. And there's a hilarious story I share in the book about how we first met over email, but if this will date me, but I was learning email. And I think I'm a perfect example of how we can assume as Christians sometimes that other people have heard the gospel, even in mainstream society, but oftentimes we haven't. My concept of Christianity, for the most part, was, you know, big-haired TV evangelists who took your money on television. I was very cynical about it. I had started reading about world religions for my thesis. There was a lot of intellectual work that was going on about reading religions and things. But in terms of actually being exposed to what the gospel is and what it really means and hearing it clearly, I had not had that experience per se. And this gentleman, we ended up talking late one night as a result of this email conversation, and he just began by asking me questions, which I think is a wonderful way to welcome people into examining the faith and thinking about it in relation to their own lives. And I remember the very first question he actually asked me was, who is God to you? And no one had ever asked me that question. And as I describe it in my book, I remember feeling like a hummingbird that had hit the glass hard. I had been so busy getting straight A's and working jobs and helping my family and doing all the busy things that we do in our adrenaline-paced society in general, that arriving at Oxford and having the contemplative ability, going to pubs with friends, going to Evensong, the whole place is sort of saturated in thinking about big thoughts, but also in church bells and things like that. I finally had this moment where that question hit me, and I hadn't been ever forced to think about that or to articulate a clear answer. And then, of course, when he asked me further who Jesus was to me, I began to realize I didn't really have an answer. I had this cultural sort of cliche, but I certainly had no concept of a personal relationship or who he was outside of sort of this caricature, which is really, as an academic, a terribly unfair thing to deduct. You know, I'd been trained here to try and find the truth or try and find reasoning for my arguments, and here I was actually, you know, putting down or not even giving any credit something like the Bible, which I had not fairly read. again, I'm an example of somebody who can go through 20 years of the public school system and not have had read the Bible, just as a sheer, you know, literary book. And I found when I did start to read it from cover to cover out of just interest and curiosity as a lit major, it was, I had to say, the best creative nonfiction piece I'd ever read. I couldn't believe how amazingly intricate it was and how it rolled itself out from Genesis to Revelation, and it was just really incredible. And actually, it provided many commonsensical things, answers to things I'd been wrestling with, like suffering and that in the world. Something like the theory of the fall made complete sense, actually, to how our world functions now. And so there were a lot of things that struck me as amazingly true, but to have someone just simply ask me questions about what I thought and started to get me thinking about it. And, of course, when he shared who Jesus was and what Jesus was about in sort of a gentle, non-threatening way and not a creepy way or a cheesy way as well, just an authentic way, the seeds are planted, and you can't unplant them. As I said, you know, you hear the truth and you can't unhear it. And I grappled with it for a long time. I beat against him for several months and other Christians I began to meet. Fortunately, he was a pastor's boy, so he was used to taking the bullets, but and he was studying theology at the time. But every time, I think what spoke to me not only was the truth of the gospel and how that gets into your heart in some way and grows eventually, but his patience and kindness in constantly addressing my questions and concerns. It's not that he always had the perfect theologically tight answer, because many times he didn't, or that's impossible, but his even just his character and his kindness in addressing them for me spoke a lot to me.
You know, as you said, and you write so wonderfully in the chapter about, you know, that once you hear the gospel, you can't unhear it. But I'd be interested, were there maybe times or some examples when you wish that you could unhear it?
Of course. I mean, Jesus isn't this placebo you swallow and your life is better. If anything, if you look at really having a true life of faith in the eyes, it's not easy. And we're told it's not easy, but God is with us in it on this side of heaven. And, you know, Neil, that's a question I really looked at. I mean, once I really began to think, gosh, if this Jesus is who he claims to be, this changes everything. And if we really look at what he claims, and I think that there's a sense in which Jesus has a power, that name has a power more than any other name. No other name spoken has any power that comes close to that. People either embrace it or they kick against it. It produces something, and you can only remain apathetic for so long, too. And I think once I really began to realize, wow, if this is what's set before me, if this is the line in the sand, that's everything. That's the difference between everything.
You know, you're in a community where you're, you know, that's a 1,000-year-old city, and it's you're surrounded by religious trappings, right? And you're focusing on literature and, you know, art and all those things, which had their roots, of course, you know. So you're seeing evidences, I guess, all over of the reality of, I guess, maybe the Christian gospel. But did it impact you, affect you at all, or and your friends? I mean, did you say, well, you know, this is a nice church, and we go to chapel because it's cool in the evening, or what?
Sure, it's a great question, because I think we have a lot of those remnants of faith, and we don't know what to do about them. A perfect example is Oriel College, it was this college I was studying in. When I first walked in to the front, actually, it has this precipice that's for the King Charles, and it says Carolinus, and actually the first four letters were Caro, which is my nickname. I remember walking into that college and being struck by sort of Caro written right in front of me when I was so homesick that my nickname would be right there. Carolyn's the feminine form of Charles, which is my father's name. And right across the street from that Caro is St. Mary's, which is one of the largest churches, most beautiful, oldest churches there. And I would have to pass by it all the time to go to the Bodleian Library to study. And its side door is always open, even in the middle of the night, which I think is a really beautiful thing when church doors are not locked. and I would go in, and that's where I started reading the Bible, actually, on borrowed pages. And I would go in and just start reading. And I think that it was in ways in which that church, I didn't even attend with services and things. I just went and sat in the loneliness and started reading Scripture. But I also had the benefit of going to St. Ebbs with some friends, being drawn into St. Ebbs, St. Aldate's, which are very sort of lively evangelical Anglican churches. I attended several churches that were really alive and really teaching the gospel and really being embedded in the word. And for somebody who was starting to seek or at least intrigued, even if I was kicking against it, there was a lot of intellectual support for searching through those things. But more so, again, what was bolstering up the intellectual support for Christianity was the people, was their hearts, was their servitude, was their attitudes, was the way that they were loving me and extending themselves to me and living this gospel. And so, again, I was exposed to how unhypocritical these folks were. And of course, there's always examples that are sad of where faith is not represented well. We see that constantly all the time. But they really overshadow, I think especially media-wise, the folks who are living thoughtful Christian lives in steady ways that are, you know, throwing the pebbles in the pond and those ripples have an effect. The people who are raising their children to love God, the people who are trying to love their God in daily ways, even when obedience is difficult, those little ways are actually great in terms of how they speak to others. And that was the way that I was actually drawn in and bathed in those examples.
I mean, people have certainly been kind to you before, but now you're sort of seeing their, maybe their motivation in new eyes?
Exactly, because I think that kindness is always wonderful. I mean, we like to talk about random acts of kindness, but I think when we serve actually God in being kind and gracious to others, they are not random. They're purposeful, and that's even more meaningful. And when it comes to suffering, too, I mean, Viktor Frankl said so well, you know, that if suffering has purpose, if it's meaningful, then it's you can endure it. And so when you start to see how even loving someone when you're not in the mood, the ways that I was extended to even and tolerated and loved, even when I was really quite acidic towards the faith by others, especially TDH, really ended up speaking to me more than all the arguments thrown together. You know, Lewis says so well in his preface to the Psalms that we can get caught up in defending the truth almost too much, and we forget that it's the truth. You know, we start to apologize with apologia, and there's a way in which we can lose sight of the truth and how it speaks in and of itself. And so that old question, you know, can we be good without God? Well, not unconditionally. And I began to see that with something we answer to larger than ourselves and believe in larger than ourselves comes with acts of kindness that are also connected to hope, and they're connected to an eternal perspective, and they are connected to something larger than just myself. And I knew that me on my own was not enough.
We'll take a break in a couple minutes, but let's get started on this part of your journey. I mean, talk about how you worked through some of your reservations with your friends, and maybe if there's some advice that you'd give to those listening right now that are maybe just maybe new in the faith or questioning that, and friends are maybe not outright atheistic, but agnostic or antagonistic. What would you say? And again, we'll get started. We'll break in a couple minutes here. Carolyn Weber is our guest, and let's recheck our phone line, and we'll get to part two of the story here in a moment. The book we're talking about is her memoir called Surprised by Oxford. Carolyn is an author, speaker, and a teacher, specialized in 18th and 19th century British and European literature, and she went to Oxford winning a scholarship and had the opportunity to study there at one of the amazing colleges there. And in that process, began the grappling with the God-shaped void in her life. And Carolina, we just got a minute before a break. But did you know you had a void in your life? I mean, did you sense that there was a void in your life as you were kind of starting to wrestle with this?
Yes, absolutely. I remember before I even winning the scholarship, feeling that I would. And you know, Neil, the more I've looked at folks in my life, and now as a teacher and looking at students and everything, I think we were all shaped. Obviously, that gets an argument. We're all shaped to long for God and can only be filled by God. And I don't know anyone who doesn't have that longing. And if they don't, if they say they don't, I don't believe them. I think we all have that longing that drives us to him. And so the opportunity to study at Oxford just actually cleared a path for me in many ways to have that longing filled or to seek what it was about.
We're going to continue our discussion, hear more of Carolyn Weber's story and the work. Really, it's God's story at work in Carolyn's life. And it should be an encouragement to all of us that, you know, God is still at work, even in the midst of places like Oxford and, in your life and mine. God is at work. We've got some copies of Carolyn's book that we'll give away, Surprised by Oxford. It's a powerful testimony of changed life. You can give us a call and register for that at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. More with Carolyn Weber in a moment.
How firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord, is laid for your faith in his excellent word. What more can he say than to you he hath said, to you to Jesus.
My guest today is Carolyn Weber. Carolyn, like many in our world, has had a focus on an interest in literature. In fact, she's a professor specializing in literature, but had never actually gotten around to reading the Bible on her own. And her graduate studies at Oxford brought her into God used that opportunity to begin to work in her heart, change her life. She's told about it in a wonderful book called Surprised by Oxford. It's a memoir. She came there with issues from fatherhood, feminism, doubt, and doctrine, and encountered somebody that she called TDH. That got it started, but you had a circle of friends, as I'm sure most graduate students do. You would have conversations late in the night. I'm interested, Carolyn, in what some of your friends were, in their faith journeys or lack thereof, what they were kind of pushing back to you on some of the issues you were wrestling with.
Oh, sure. I think, like all folks, we have friends that run the gamut. And I started meeting some really wonderful, thoughtful Christians that were able to encourage me in talking about the faith in deep and meaningful ways. But I also have friends who were antagonistic, even way more so than myself, towards any kind of Christian belief. I had some that were just, really apathetic or didn't want to go there. And I think in a way it allows us, though, to talk about God. I think sometimes, especially on North American campuses, ironically, we can't talk about God, which is one of the biggest questions there is. And to just be able to actually talk about these questions, in a pub or after a tutorial or whatever was a really great gift. And so I also began to realize that, for some people, their faith can be comfortable, and that's a good thing. I mean that as a compliment. They might not be a questioning type of person. I'm a questioner, and I thought that would deflate God, that he wouldn't be able to stand up to the bullets I wanted to riddle him with. But, now that I've become a Christian and I've grown closer in him, and I see that, he's not a fragile God, and our questions honor him. He's made us who we are, and the various ways that we question or doubt or whatever are even pathways to bring ourselves to him. As a result, I've actually seen several of my friends from Oxford become Christians too. As I mentioned before, I don't have a believing family, but my sister became a Christian a few years ago. And having the privilege of seeing their faith journey as well has allowed me to see that everyone's is so different and so unique, and all glorify him, and there's no one beyond grace. And so I think I was struck. One of the chapters that spoke most to me was the beginning of John, the Gospel of John, because I am a literature person and I love words. And when John talks about Christ coming as the Word made flesh, God's love for us, and coming as truth and grace, and those two things really bound together. And I had a hard time understanding what grace was, and I think grace isn't really something that you comprehend or break down or explain. And that's why I gave the example of lighting the candle in the church. I used to go into the church and light my candle on the lowest rung because I didn't think I even deserved to light a candle up high. And eventually when I became a Christian, I did that. I lit the candle higher because it begins to sink in that, what Christ has done for us. The crucifix as a child for me growing up was just something that was frightening. It looked or weird, this body hanging static on the cross. But when I began to understand what Christ had really done by coming and dying for us and making us righteous in God, setting things right, filling that gap, one of the authors I was reading was Sheldon Vanocken, and he writes this beautiful book, Severe Mercy, about his conversion at Oxford. And so many people talk about becoming Christian as taking this leap into faith, this leap with faith. But he actually talked about one of the most convicting things for him was looking back and seeing actually, if he denied Christ, the chasm between him and God. And that struck me too, what would be behind me as well as ahead of me. And so it was those things working together as I was battling this for several months that brought me closer to finally just asking God. I think I was also one of those people like that just wanted to believe. I finally got to the point where I wanted to believe, but I couldn't. I just couldn't take that final step. And I really realized that the stories of the healings, the parables of the healings, also spoke to me. And in particular, at one moment was the healing of the man who comes. He actually asked for his son to be healed, and he says to Jesus, please heal me in my unbelief. I want to believe. Heal me in my disbelief. Heal me from my disbelief. And Jesus does. And it's the lowest of prayers. It's the lowest of low. But it really shows that there's nowhere to hide from God. His grace extends to all of us. It's actually pride to think that you can't be saved, or grace doesn't extend to you, or you haven't been bought for and paid for, and therefore you're now free. And that was an eye-opener for me.
Well, talk a little bit about maybe that turning point. I mean, alluded to Lewis earlier about, you know, becoming a reluctant Christian. I mean, you were at that point to say, you know, I think I want to believe. I know some of your friends said, well, you might as well get on with it, because sort of once the train is on the track, I mean, you can't stop it, sort of thing. Did you have that sense?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, in the sense that once the truth gets under your skin, you can't get rid of it. And once you begin to have a taste of the abundant life and you see actually what life is with faith, you can't imagine living without it or dying without it, too. I look at it now and I think I don't know how people live or die without faith. But prayer, fellowship, things like that, going to scripture, those were all alien to me. They were not ways and tools I grew up with. For instance, I was a real cynic about prayer. I used to think, well, you know, what's prayer? You're just talking to no one and no one's listening and no one's answering and, you know, what's going on? As I became a Christian and sharing the gospel with my friends and family and realizing that prayer is the most powerful thing we have, and beginning to understand commands like pray without ceasing in a different light. That prayer is always, it's a heart attitude. It's always something we can go to, always something that we are there for, not only problem solving, but just speaking and being. And ways, that's the first recourse we can go to for friends and loved ones and everyone. It's such an act of compassion as well, even for complete strangers. And fellowship that had seemed so random to me. Why do people go to church? Why do people, you know, seek fellowship? What does this mean? But beginning to see how others in Christ support us and bolster us up and help us when we're low and vice versa. And scripture, that really, when we go to scripture, we are given what we need. We're given the bread for that. There are answers in terms of how to practically live our lives, but it's also like sticking your finger in this electric socket. It's powerful. It really is powerful, like nothing else I'd ever read. And, you know, Bonhoeffer has this great quote where he says, you know, Nietzsche can write a poem about religion, but it's not scripture. There's a difference, and there is something that's different and that you can't put your word on in a Holy Spirit power. And once you have a taste of that, or once you're drawn, you know, if you knock, you'll be answered, and no one's turned away for the asking, not one. And it's powerful stuff, and you feel then that you have discovered something, and yet it's always been there. You know, God hasn't stepped away from us. We have. And so by sharing with friends and things, I think that's one of the most powerful ways, is just pray that God would reveal himself to them and pray that their eyes would be opened to what he's offering them, but also that, you know, you'd be given yourself words of grace and truth and a spirit of graciousness to model that to them.
you know, it is one of the hardest things we do to share this personal faith with those closest to us. And
it is.
You want to just talk about maybe just do you have some advice, or maybe looking back, just in terms of the conversations that you've had and still have ongoing?
Oh, I don't know if I have any advice because I'm so bumbling through myself and trying to learn myself. But I think, you know, the stakes are so high with the folks we love most, right? Because we feel it's all relative, if you pardon the pun. You know, we feel that their judgment of Jesus and therefore of us is so much more personal. It stings so much more. I remember when I went back to my fiance and said to him, I want you to explore this, at least explore this with me. And he was really adamant not to. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man. I was really grateful to have had him in my life. But I knew that I could not marry someone who was not on the same spiritual page as myself, or at least go into it on those terms. And it was incredibly painful to initiate that breakup. And a lot of pressure, you know, you think, well, maybe I'll just go ahead and we'll get married and we'll make it work out. But you know that that there's not only a danger, but it's a disservice to him as well as yourself to go forward in that way and to God. And those decisions are hard. And I think that, again, the best ways is just to pray for discernment, to pray for them to be bathed in God's presence. And I think the other thing that really spoke to me was when I got to know Christians, and of course we're all human and we're struggling in all our various walks and ways, but there is a peace that Christians have, especially when we remember, and I mean that fullest communion sense of the term, when we remember and put ourselves back in God's presence, there is this peace. He does give us this peace. There's something different about Christians, as there should be. Earl Palmer has this great statement where he says, you know, Jesus is the normal one. And I remember reading that and thinking, wait, because I had such a culture of growing up thinking Jesus is the abnormal one. He's so weird. You know, who is this weird Jesus guy? But when we look at it and think he's the norm, actually, and it's us who have fallen away from that norm, it gave me an entirely different perspective in terms of who Jesus is and what he offers. And so I would say being moving back now to my hometown, I'd been away for 20 years. I had not lived here as a Christian, as a believer, and we left our jobs and communities and that to come up here a couple of years ago to do local ministry and to love on my family at close range. And it's been a really interesting experience, canny and uncanny at the same time, to come back where there has been great antagonism and sometimes overt anger and sort of antagonism towards us, but on the other hand, a curiosity. And I've really learned to just keep praying, keep praying yourself through it. But God is, his light does come through an authentic heart. It really does. And I've seen some great miracles here firsthand that testify to that. I mean, I think about just my relationship with my father. Very rocky, very difficult. When I first moved back here, he read my book finally. And there's some mental illness involved as well, so it's a complicated situation for him and for us. And we had a big discussion about it, and it blew apart a lot of things. But it also opened up things to talk about. And you speak the demons away when you communicate in Christ. And it got to the point where he was absolutely just broken down, and he said to me, I don't know where to go from here. I don't know if you can forgive me or if you can love me or any of this can be repaired. And after I asked him to forgive me as well, because we all are short-sighted in our relationships in both ways, I just told him, I said, I love you like God loves us. There's nothing you can do that would cause me not to love you. And he let out this tremendous sigh, and I understand that relief. That's the relief that grace brings to us. And you know, things have been a little bumpy here and there, but overall I have tremendous healing with him. And we had this surprise fourth dessert baby up here that we didn't expect and named him for my father. And he's gone to church with us, and there's been tremendous amounts of healing. And it doesn't always work out that way on this side of heaven, and we wish we could say that for all of our relationships. But the difference is our hearts. God knows our hearts, and he knows how we're trying, and he honors that, and he's faithful. But, you know, the work has already been done. We've been saved, and everything else above that is icing on the cake.
Talking to Carolyn Weber today. By the way, Carolyn, one of our listeners in Winnipeg, Paul, checked in, said, thanks so much for the broadcast. He says, I grew up in London, Ontario, and know the pastor of Carolyn's home church. So anyway, Paul gives you
greetings. Oh,
that's
lovely. So. We have a terrific home church. It actually, this is neat, Neil. I used to bicycle to that church. It was part of our home, our little library, local library, and I used to bicycle to it as a child. In part to hide from my father. He used to have angry outbursts when he would show up, and I would hide there and read. And now I go there. It's my home church. It's pretty amazing.
We're going to hear more of Carolyn's story because it's just there's some good lessons there, and touch a little bit on her new book, Holy is the Day, as well, Living in the Gift of the Present. Carolyn Weber, we're talking about her book, Surprised by Oxford, and you're listening to Connecting Faith, 877-93-FAITH. Got some copies. We'll do a drawing for here at the end of today's program. Perhaps it will be an encouragement, especially to you or to someone that you know and love and care about. 877-93-FAITH.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitmer, General Manager of Faith Radio. You and I both know that living for Jesus is a lifelong journey. And we're committed to helping you connect faith to life with access when you need it. And to help you keep your faith strong throughout the day, we'd like to send you a Live by Faith wristband. It's free. Wear it each day as a reminder that you're on a journey of faith. If you would like your free wristband, visit myfaithradio.com to request yours. We'll get it out to you as soon as possible.
We're at 48 past the hour, hearing Carolyn Weber's story, told so well in the book called Surprised by Oxford, and it will be something that would be particularly just encouraging to you, and just to see God at work, and to I described to someone the other day, it's like sitting at a British pub where there's not a lot of room, so you're really close, packed together, and so you can't help but overhear the conversations going out the next table, and that's really the way you feel about it, and you sort of want to just jump in and add to the conversation, which I'm sure probably happens quite often, right? People are free to offer a thought or a point along the way. So.
That's a delightful description. That's exactly it. I mean, I think that in our North American culture, we have so much anonymity. You know, we don't even often know our neighbors or even the person in the apartment next to us. And there the culture is, I mean, Brits are known for being a bit standoffish, but the culture is, a friend of mine put it so well, once you make a friend with a Brit, they're a friend for life. But there is this sense of a great community in not only scholarship and discussion, but in camaraderie. It's a very neat place, very unusual place, and it was a wonderful experience to go there and to have, as I said before, just the opportunity to talk about the things that matter most.
Now, Carolyn, I want you to maybe just talk a little bit about, there's probably someone listening today who is, feeling like they're putting their candle on the low shelf, feeling unworthy. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the Georgia Peach visit or not, but we should bring that into the story at some point, I think. So.
Well, eventually, spoiler alert, I guess, but eventually I married TDH, but that was several years later. Now he's more TBH. He's more tall, bald, and handsome.
Okay,
but,
all right.
At the time we weren't at all romantically involved. He had shared the gospel. We were friends. I was still, in this relationship and then became a Christian and eventually had to break that relationship when my fiancé wasn't entertaining the faith at all. And down the road, girls came to visit TDH. I didn't realize actually along the ways that I was falling in love with him. And by the time he went to go work in the States and I stayed on in England, I actually realized that I was in love with him and that he really blew all the categories apart for me in terms of what a man could be. And I don't just mean that romantically. I really mean that in a non sort of cheesy, godly man way. When a man really serves God with his whole heart, he is big. He's big and amazing and incredibly influential. I'm proof of that, of how my husband not only shared the gospel articulately and was a kind, loving friend to me, but even eventually when we did fall in love and become married, how that pebble drops in the pond. And, you know, now friends of mine and family of mine and our children and the eternal repercussions of someone who lives their life in loving faith can have. And so grace, you know, it's as I was saying earlier, it's not that you sort of accept Jesus and everything is rosy. And that's why I also wrote in the book about becoming a Christian and this great joy you feel, but then as you begin to really live it in the world and how hard that can be too, in not only big things, but little things, like even just little friendships and things like that, in the ways that people sling arrows at you. And some of the greatest arrows can come from within. I remember first talking to TDH about one of the stories that really ticked me off in the Bible, and that was, you know, the thieves that are crucified with Jesus. And, you know, the one hurls insults, but the other one says to him, "Remember me, Lord, you know, remember me." And he says, "I will remember you. Today you will be with me in paradise." And that story used to really tick me off. I used to think, how unfair is that? You know, what does that mean for somebody who's lived their lives really trying to be righteous and careful and thoughtful and godly, and then this guy gets in at the last minute? And I remember hurling that at TDH, and his response to me was, "Thank God. Thank God for that story, because we're all that thief, and we don't deserve grace, and yet we have it extended to us, and it doesn't matter when we get it or when we take it. It's there, And, you know, once you've been baptized, you can't be unbaptized. And there's this sense in which when I first became a Christian, even though, and it's still today, I mean, we all do this, even though you know that you've accepted grace and you know what God has done for you and that you are unspeakably precious to him in terms of what he's done, you know, there's no greater love one has than laying down his life for his friends, we still battle with the day-to-day self-esteem issues. And the worst arrows come from within. And I remember this girl coming to visit TDH, and she was from the perfect Christian family, and and had all the money and wealth and security and education, all the things that, you know, I could say in a column that I did not have growing up, in a close relationship with her father. That was the one that really was my Achilles heel. And, you know, all those ways that we can compare ourselves. And it can sound silly and trite, and it was funny in many, many ways, but it also speaks to many examples of how we feel like we, quote unquote, don't measure up, and we lose sight of really what grace has done for us and how it's given us that freedom not to measure ourselves by the world's standards. And so I did share that story of how when she comes, I'm just heartbroken. And she comes to visit TDH, and I'm just heartbroken because I know I don't have an even playing field in terms of, in many ways. She was also very attractive. So I hope it's a funny story, because later on I could laugh at it more, but it's also, I think, a story that hopefully encapsulates many of the ways that we don't fully swallow the grace that's been given to us. And what, as a result, we live in fear, or we live in ways that don't embolden us in him. And we're called to be a people of courage and of self-discipline and hearts that are not faint. We've been given everything, absolutely everything. There is nothing that rivals the grace we've been given and the freedom and the power it gives us. And if we stay fastened and secure in that, that's where we need to be in this world.
That's a wonderful reminder. Again, the book we were referencing is called Surprised by Oxford. It's Carolyn Weber's story, her memoir of God finding her and drawing her to himself. And she got to experience his love and grace in ways that she could have never imagined before. We got just a couple minutes left. We should just say a word about Holy is the Day, because this was written in your life as a teacher and a young mom, and just say a word about the what we can find in Holy is the Day.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, it was prompted by a conversion again. I mean, I write in Surprised by Oxford about my first conversion, but I think we're called to grow closer to God all the time. And I wrote as a result of a difficult birth with my twins, and there was actually a near-death moment, and it really called me to convert deeper into my life. And so I try to examine what it means to listen to God's voice closer in our lives and to really step back into his presence. As I said earlier, he hasn't stepped away from us. He's there. We choose to step away from him. And so actively trying to step back into his presence. It's not a how-to book at all. It's more of a writing as praise book, I hope.
Carpe diem. You sort of changed that a little bit, right?
Yes, I changed it to carpe diem. And so instead of seize the day, seizing God. And it's a bit of a pun. I love puns. But it's that notion of trying to grasp God and not let go. Again, going back to the parables, many of the parables of healing and how many people would grasp God or seek Jesus' presence, even the woman who even touched the fringe of his robe, and they're healed. And, you know, we have that choice. I think that's the dignity that God maintains in us in our humanity, is that at any moment we can choose him, at any moment, even in great suffering. I've seen folks in deep suffering or tragedy, and they still have joy, that joy that comes from choosing God. And I don't mean that in a trite way. Joy is different from happiness. Happiness is sort of the carpe diem, see the day. But joy comes from carpe diem, really, really holding on to God, what he promises, trusting in his hope, and that he really does love us. And all of that changes everything. And you look back in his life and you see the handiwork of him, of his hand over your life. As I asked one of my friends after I converted, you know, at Oxford, and I write this in the book, and I say to him, you know, why did God, you know, choose to find me now? Why has all this happened now? And his response was, why did he, you know, keep pursuing you? And that's more of the question. And there's this sense, like Frederick Buechner writes, you know, if you look back and you can see the plot, you can see God's hand over your life. He's with you in the suffering. He's with you in the joy. And there are ways in which you can see he's been trying to get your attention.
Recommended reading, both from Carolyn Weber, Surprised by Oxford, her memoir, and Holy is the Day, Living in the Gift of the Present. You can also find out more about her writings on her blog site, pressingsave.com. Probably an email reference there, probably someplace, isn't there? But
mm-hmm. Yep, there is. You can contact me through there, right at Pressing Save.
Because yep. you've been kind of an email junkie right from the beginning, right? Kind of an early adopter and all that.
Yeah, no. Yep.
Pressing,
beware the email.
Yeah, pressingsave.com. You can check it out. Carolyn, blessings to you. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us today. And we've enjoyed. I truly enjoyed the writing. It's recommended reading, and glad to have you on today.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Happy New Year.
Yes, likewise to you. Carolyn Weber joining us today. You can check out her book, Surprised by Oxford, which is from Thomas Nelson, and Holy is the Day, Living in the Gift of the Present, which is from InterVarsity Press. And you can listen to this podcast, broadcast, pass it on to a friend by going to our website at myfaithradio.com.